Yes. All right. Check 1, 2. Mic check. Yeah. Whoa. Check. All right.
Yeah. What's up, guys? It's like, got to come up with something new when you're checking the mic. Just forever. Ever, it's just check 1, 2. How does that last forever? I wish I owned that, right? Every time somebody went up to a mic to check it, check 1, 2, you just got to check. A real check. Check 1, 2, you're just like, yeah, check 1, 2, in my fucking pocket. I don't know. Hey, what's up, guys? What's today? Monday, February 10th. February 10th in the house. Happy birthday to all kinds of Aquarius people. Duff McKagan, Axl Rose, Marco Segreda from Death Angel, all kinds of guys. Happy birthday, any Aquarians. There you are. Aquarians are the best. People know that. Had a great weekend. How was everybody's weekend? You good? Great guest today. I'll get into that in a minute. Before I do, what was I going to tell you? Oh, I read something cool in the SF Weekly. I still read the SF Weekly. Or actually, somebody tweeted it to me or something. But guy Greg Behrendt, I think his name is, writes for the Weekly. Hope I got that right. Greg Behrendt. I get he's a comedian from San Fran. And he was doing a little bit on people, like when you do a show in San Fran and you go, yeah, I used to live in San Francisco, but I live in L.A. now, then people boo. You know, he was talking about that in the SF Weekly this week. They'll be boo, like you know. And he was like, how stupid that was. And he got into some good points, and then I started thinking, it just blows my mind because it does happen. People look at you, you move like you're a traitor. I've been in LA now 12 years. I don't really get it that much anymore because, you know, I just shut them down with, look at all the good shit that's happened since I've moved. Look, I love San Fran. Best city in the world, man. But, you know, you can move in your life. I think you should move at least 1 or 2 times. Check shit out in your life, man. Why stay somewhere your whole fucking life? That's kind of weird. At least move for a year and go, all right, I did that. But, you know, try something different. I know it's scary, but go fuck it. I'm going to New York tomorrow. And then just try it. But don't boo L.A. if you live in San Fran. Look, I love San Fran. I lived there all my life. It's beautiful. It's killer. Best food ever. Amazing scenery there, you know. It's just the small little city that just rocks. But to boo L.A., you're just an idiot. What kind of asshole boos L.A.? If I'm on stage at San Fran and you boo L.A., and I ask you if you watch TV or movies and you say, yeah, I'm just fuck off. You're a hypocrite. Booing L.A. is like booing your savior, you know, from your shitty like life on sitting on the couch watching TV or movies. You know, don't boo that. They're taking you away. L.A., that's where the movies are made. So you're booing movies and TV. Then what are you booing? You're booing Sunset Strip, where some of the most incredible music was made. That's what you're booing. Sunset Strip, you know? Eagles, Guns N' Roses, The Doors, Motley Crue, The Birds. You're booing that? You're booing Malibu Beach? You're actually going to boo Malibu. When I say I'm from L.A. and you go boo, you're booing Malibu. Fucking assholes. Don't boo Malibu. Are you kidding me? You're booing Fast Times at Ridgemont High then. Because that was just an L.A. movie. You're booing skateboarding. You're booing surfing, the sun, beautiful women. You're booing Disneyland. You know? Boo someone else, you dicks. Boo the Midwest, where they don't like gay marriage or they, you know, thrive in racism. Boo those fuckers. You know, the South. Boo the South. Not the Midwest, but boo the South. You don't boo LA. It's California. If you live in California, you won, unless you're in Bakersfield. Boo Bakersfield. I'm fucking crazy today, right? Anyway, don't boo LA, you dicks. It's so dumb. It's not a sporting event. We're not fucking playing each other in a Super Bowl each year. Like, LA, San Fran, Super Bowl. Dumb. Yeah, you can boo the Dodgers, but don't boo LA. So that's my thing, man. If you boo LA, you're booing all the kinds of good shit, and that's just dumb. Little note for you. Hope you guys are good Monday. I don't know. Having fun. Okay. Speaking of San Fran, I'm going to be back there March 27, 28, 29 at Cobb's with Chris D'Elia. Get your tickets now. Come down and boo LA, and I'll light you up. come out, Cobbs. I can't wait. God, I've been doing San Fran a lot lately, and I just love it up there in the Bay Area. I get to see friends. I get to see Fletch, my man Fletch from Wonder Bread 5. I get to see him. Joey DeBono, guys, like my friends, you know? So it's cool. Do comedy at night and go eat at the greatest restaurants. Get a burrito in the Mission. Go to El Farolito. Fire up a quesadilla. Watch a gang fight. Actually, there's no more gangs in the Mission. It's all techies, right? Techies. Watch the techie war. That's going to fucking boil up, man. You watch. San Fran's going to have a meltdown again, just like they did in 96 with that dot-com greed. And you're going to fuck yourselves. You know? My advice, if you ever want to move to San Fran, as soon as that techie meltdown happens, get in there right away. Get on the ground floor, low rent. Right? All right, crazy. Guest today, Billy Sheehan, bass god. Billy Sheehan, are you kidding me, man? I mean, who's better on bass than this guy? Right? I mean, first of all, I think he's 61, I forget. But he's been playing music since 1969. Like, winner. The guy fucking won. He's in the music biz. He's got a great attitude. No bitter. He's never, ever bitter. I told him he's one of the nicest rock stars I've ever met. He's never like, fuck that guy. This is no good. No, this guy is like positive, man. What a great guy. Billy Sheehan, your guy. Who's Billy Sheehan? I'll tell you the fuck Billy Sheehan is. He played on one of the most iconic records in my life, David Lee Roth's Eat 'Em and Smile, which is just a masterpiece. When that came out, 4th of July weekend, I remember I was in Santa Cruz. I went to the boardwalk that weekend. And, man, Eat 'Em and Smile. You know, are you kidding me? How great is the title, Eat 'Em and Smile? David Lee Roth, that is just best, I think. I mean, besides the early Van Halen, but Eat 'Em and Smile. One of my favorite songs on it, Shy Boy. And Billy wrote that years ago in Talis, his first band. Check out Eat 'Em and Smile. Don't be dumb, man. Go get that if you don't have it. Elephant Gun, insane. Yankee Rose, one of the best videos made in the MTV era. Billy played with Talis in the early 70s. And guess who managed Talis? Mr. Harvey Weinstein. He's going to tell that story on here. That's incredible. Before Harvey was a movie mogul, he was a band manager and a concert promoter with Michael Cole, who, you know, is a huge promoter. That did like Madonna tours and Stones tours and shit like that. Those guys back in the day were rockers. That's why Harvey's cool. That's why he's gangster. That's why he's got good taste. He was into rock. He fucking rolled around. Gangster, rock and roll, movies, all that shit. Goes together hand in hand. Check it out, Billy Sheehan. Man, he's got a great band right now, Winery Dogs. Give him some love. You guys, thanks for your love. Last but not least, if you do play an instrument and you're listening to this episode, get yourself, you know, a foot pedal. You got any foot pedals? You play guitar, bass, keyboards, whatever. Earthquaker Devices, where you want to go. These guys rock. They make handmade boutique guitar stomp boxes right in Akron, Ohio, land of Devo and Black Keys, I believe. I just got some cool shirts from them, too. Look at their shirts. I got one Hoof Reaper shirt, the one I'm rocking on the new photo, if you've seen that. Get yourself stomp boxes, earthquakerdevices.com. One of the best stomp boxes ever. John Alderady uses them. My man from Mars Volta. All kinds of guys use them. Get a pedal. Tell them you know me. They'll hook you up with a discount. Get some fuzz, distortion, overdrive, octave, modulators, anything. They got them all. I'm waiting for them to come out with the Del Rey pedal. Del Rey pedal. I don't know. So yeah, Earthquaker, love you guys. Donation to the podcast made by John Glavin out of nowhere. A couple nights ago, I'm sleeping. Bing! I look, a donation from this guy. How fucking cool are you, John? You rock. I love it. It so blows me back all the time when I see a donation from someone. I just can't believe it. So thank you, brother. Everybody else, thanks for tuning in, man. iTunes rocking lately. You guys have been writing those reviews. Keep the reviews going. Subscribe and rate, review, tell your friends. iTunes, allthingscomedy.com, Stitcher, SoundCloud. You can find me anywhere. If you're listening, you obviously found me. Got to get going. Don't forget, Bay Area, see you at Cobb's in March. Everybody else, keep rocking. And that's about it. I'll leave you with this Harley Davidson of Los Angeles. Go see them if you're in L.A. Los Angeles, Harley Davidson, 2635 West Orangethorpe Avenue. They got an incredible sale going on pre-owned bikes right now. They got great financing. They're blowing out their pre-owned used motorcycles. They've got tons of them. Go see them in there. Los Angeles Harley Davidson in Anaheim. The only dealer called LA Harley. Get a shirt, rock it. You're out at Disneyland. Sneak over there, dads. Dump off the kids and go to LA Harley. They got test rides. They got amazing showroom, great parts selection, motor clothes. Get it all. Find them at Los Angeles Harley Davidson of Anaheim.com or on their Twitter. They got a Twitter too. Just found out. It's LA Harley Anaheim. Follow them. Tell them Del Rey told you to follow. All right, guys, sit back. Here he is, Mr. Billy Sheehan. Thank you guys for tuning in. Keep the emails coming, DeanDelRey@yahoo.com. And keep coming out to the live shows. And thanks for all the tweets, guys. You guys fucking rock. Light the candles of rock. See you guys. Yeah. All right, here we are. Another episode of Let There Be Talk. Amazing guest today. Billy Sheehan, how are you, buddy?
How you doing, Dean? I'm doing good.
Man, so
you're in
cool.
a misty, cool, overcast night in Los Angeles.
Yeah, this is magic. Usually people are over here and it's about, for real, in the last 6 months, just 100 every day.
Oh, it's been so amazing. All the weather through the holidays was incredible.
Yeah, right. We had like a 95 degree Christmas.
I was laying out in the sun.
Really?
On my rooftop patio, my underpants, and lay there. I get a little vitamin D.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
it was
man.
Beautiful.
You lay out in the sun?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know.
For an Irishman, I got to be careful, though.
Yeah, right? Right. Now, I just read you're 60.
I turned 60 last March.
That's insane. I'm 40. This comes out Monday. I'm 48. Richie's birthday is on the 3rd also.
Oh, no kidding.
So I'm going to be 48. You look amazing.
Well, thanks.
You're in shape.
Pretty good shape.
Do you work out or anything?
Nah.
No, you're just one of those tall, skinny guys, right?
Yeah, I you know, I like to do some lifting, but I have my shoulders a little out, so I got to get that fixed up, and then I'll do some more lifting.
Yeah,
but it's a simple exercise, builds muscle, and muscle burns calories, so you know.
Yeah,
and I was gonna run the marathon for my 60th birthday.
You were? Which one? The LA Marathon?
Yeah, and I'd never run one before.
Right.
It turns out I got really sick at the NAMM show, which if anybody listening doesn't know, that's the National Association of Music Merchants. It's a big trade show they have every year for guitars and amps.
I just talked about it last week, yeah.
Yeah.
You got sick there? I did too. What? Now, what did you have? I had this chest thing.
Unbelievable. And it lasted for months. It's unreal.
It just wouldn't go away, man. It's just crazy. These bugs are getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah. And about the last three NAMM shows, I've gotten sick. So this last one I went to 2 days ago, or that last weekend, I didn't get sick. So thank goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. You just, I mean, there's so many people in there.
Oh, and they're all, somebody comes from Madagascar and they got their, and when they shake your hands are slimy wet.
Yeah.
You know, if my hand was slimy, soaking wet, I don't know if I'd reach out to grab somebody else.
I don't shake people's hands,
else,
right? You know? Yeah. It's like, you know, dude, it's just... you got wet hand. I mean, it's funny. I was talking about the NAMM show and I hadn't gone in like 10 years, 15 years or something. I don't even know what it was, but I used to go with Varney all the time.
Yeah, Mike Varney, one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah, yeah. I had Varney on recently, and he said he featured you in his spotlight column.
Yeah.
Like one of the first guys.
Yeah, one of the earliest. My first national press in the USA was that.
What year was that? You remember?
82, maybe 83.
Yeah.
83, maybe.
Now, you grew up in Buffalo, and you played in a band that only some people know, Talis.
Yeah.
A lot of people, like I was telling you on our live podcast at the Improv, my bass player only listed two bands, Talis and Angel.
Oh, God. That's a combo, all right? The Angel. I'm not too familiar with them, but I know they were pretty glamorous.
Yeah. Now, you grew up in Buffalo?
Yeah, Buffalo, New York, right outside of Kenmore, town of Tonawanda area. It's a little north of... And it was a great place to grow up as a musician because in the 70s, it was just jammed with clubs and bands. And we were playing every single night of the week, 3-4 sets a night, constantly. We played 21 nights in a row one time.
Wow. And covers?
Mostly all covers then, yeah.
Right.
So it was just the greatest training ground ever. Like the Beatles in Hamburg on the Reeperbahn, they played for, you know, 8 or 10 years as a cover band. It's really the greatest training there is.
It really is. I mean, like I'm a comedian. And, you know, the only way to get good is to go on and go on nonstop.
Go in clubs, little places within different audiences.
All different scenarios, right? Guys throwing shit at you, guys booing, guys liking it, girls digging it, whatever the scenario is. PA down, the power out,
gotta go on.
Coming through the roof, anything.
Figure it out and get up there.
Yeah, right?
No kid. We were in a building one time and got hit by lightning. We didn't know.
Really?
And the PA wouldn't work, and I went up, and I'm open, and so I had to learn how to fix electronics to a much higher level than I was really capable of. And I looked, and I know some of the wires were unsoldered from the thing, and it turns out we ended up not doing that gig. We couldn't get anything to work, and then we found out later the whole place, none of the bar stuff worked or anything like that either, so they had to shut the place down. And the place got hit by lightning, and it destroyed our
gig. Wow. I played the Roxy one time. It was our first time playing, my band, and it was storming in L.A., and the neon that says the Roxy or whatever, I guess it had crack in it, and some rain hit, it started smoking. We were one song in, and they shut down the gig, and we didn't get to finish or anything. And we came all the way from San Fran to play.
Oh,
one song.
Yeah.
It was like Prince on Purple Rain. What's this one song shit? Right. Now you're definitely, to me, one of the like sickest bass players ever. How do you get into bass? Are you into Jack Bruce? What do you listen to when you first start out as a young kid?
Everything. I had older brother and sister, so I got turned on to music that was ahead of my time. So I heard about the Everly Brothers and Jerry Lee Lewis I was still a little tiny kid.
Some of the 50s stuff.
Yeah. So then by the time 60s came around, the Beach Boys and things of that nature, and then the Beatles blew up. By then, every neighborhood had two or three bands on the block.
Yeah.
You could walk down the street, and as one band faded away, you could hear another one coming up.
Right.
And stores that were selling furniture, you know, pushed some couches aside and set up a thing to sell guitars.
Yeah.
It was just an amazing explosion. So I listened early on, Yardbirds, Beatles, Cream, tons of Cream, everybody. I used to just listen to the radio and play along with it.
Right.
And
but did you have like a favorite? Like, oh God, this is what really got me into my style.
Yeah, Paul Samuel Smith and the Yardbirds, and then Tim Bogert from the Vanilla Fudge.
Right.
Who later played with Jeff Beck, Tim Beck, Bogert, and Appice. He was quite an amazing guy, but he got most of his influence from Jamie Jamerson, who was a Motown guy. But just right. Tim just played a more psychedelic version of it. And then from there, Entwistle, Jack Bruce, everybody.
You know, John Paul Jones?
John Paul Jones for sure. Andy Frazier from Free.
Oh, God. How about that guy, huh?
Oh, great. I just found a solo record of his. I haven't listened to it yet.
Is he still alive or did he die?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Pardon my ignorance.
I can't remember because I thought that he...
He was a great player.
God, oh. Well, that band, Free,
brilliant.
It's one of my favorite bands ever.
That was the precursor to Mr. Big, pretty much. That was our template.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Fire and Water, I tweeted a couple weeks ago. I said, Fire and Water quite possibly could be the best record ever made.
Great record.
And of course...
Carrying a Heavy Load is on that record, right?
Man, yeah.
Oh, what a song.
What about... boom, 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 boom. Oh, that song's so great. I forget what it is.
It'll come to me.
Oh, it's Mr. Big. That's the song. I'm Mr. Big.
You better watch out,
man. That record.
Well, we did a remake of that in Mr. Big because people had always. We said over and over, and you notice this yourself when you're out doing interviews, like recently with Winery Dogs.
Yeah.
Every interview. So how'd the band get together? Next interview. So how'd the band get together? Next interview. So how'd the band get together?
Yeah.
After 150 times, you go, come on, look it up online, and you can ask me another question.
I get so crazy. That's why when I have
lazy
guys
journalism.
On, yeah, I just try to shoot the shit with the guys that. I realized I should have called this show Thank You instead of Let There Be Talk because it's become this format of me thanking guys that have made incredible art, whether it be movies, music, or comedy, or whatever it is. And you know, when I first saw you, I was like, this guy's incredible.
Thanks, bro.
I mean, there was no other guys like really playing this kind of thing, you know?
Now, well, speaking of Mr. Big, that's the first song I took an unaccompanied bass solo in.
Yeah.
Used to play the song in Talis back in the day. And one night, I do this long solo because there's a bass solo in the song.
That's right.
So he said, hey, well, you guys just stop and I'll go. And I went. This is way early 70s. And I did. And then the unaccompanied bass solo thing started from like 71 or 2.
Right.
And then Mr. Big... Because I said, people would ask us, how'd you get the name Mr. Big? How'd you get the name Mr. Big? And it came from that song.
Yeah.
That was where it came from. So we did the song to finally get people to stop asking us, where'd you get the name Mr. Big from?
Right.
And then still after that, they were doing it. But that was one song that we did completely live. No overdubs, no nothing.
Wow.
Eric was in one room, Paul Gilbert in the other, drums, Bet Torp in the other, and myself.
Yeah.
And we just did a take. And that's what's on the record.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I had Eric on the show, and I grew up watching Eric, and it's funny. When I was growing up, I wasn't listening to Free. I was listening to Bad Company. I was listening to Rod Stewart, but I wasn't listening to Faces and Free. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I had to
you
go
were
backwards.
Listening to what they influenced.
That's right,
yeah,
because I'm 48, you know? But as I watched Eric and I listened to him, he was listening to all kinds of soul stuff, and I was finding shit through Eric. Like, why does this guy sound like this? Nobody sounds like this in San Francisco. You know, he's just had like a soul, you know, you know, like Sucker for a Pretty Face. It's got some, you know,
great
soul
stuff.
In it, right?
Yeah. Steve Marriott, Paul Rogers.
Yeah.
Guys like that were the precursors to Eric, and he nailed that. So that's why we did 30 Days in the Hole.
Yeah, great
on
song.
On the first Mr. Big record, too. He killed on that one as well.
That's a great song. I did see The Firm.
Oh, okay.
When they were around. So I did get to see Paul Rogers. I've seen Paul Rogers numerous times, but I got to see him really when he was still kicking ass.
Great.
You know, that Radioactive, and they played some Free right. songs and shit. Great guy. So you're playing in Buffalo,
yeah.
right? And your band reminds me, I always ask people, everybody has that band that never made it. And the person always says, like, I can't believe this band's not famous.
Yeah, I know
mine's,
a lot of them,
mine's Mother Hips, from
cool.
San Fran.
Yeah.
But you know the bands like that, right?
Yeah.
And you're just like, why?
They should have been huge.
Yeah, and you just don't know why.
to me, and though they are a pretty popular band, to me, though, they should have been 50 times more popular as a band called King's X.
King's X, right.
Should have been bigger than
right.
U2.
King is Coming was incredible.
Oh, my God. What a great
Now, when that band. Video comes out, it's like, King is coming. Three Brilliant. Guys playing the shit out of their instruments.
All singing.
The singer is amazing. He looks cool. He's got this mohawk.
Great bass player. Great tone.
Great bass player. Killer. I think the problem with them was, you know, they... It seems to me three pieces never work. You ever notice that? Well, I mean, you had Hendrix, of course, that's big.
ZZ Top, Grand Funk Railroad.
But I'm saying later on, it seemed like you needed that front guy to take it to the next level. It came around.
Yeah, that's a good point about the front guy. I think those days are over, thankfully, now for the Winery Dogs.
Me too. No, I mean, dude, I seen three pieces blow my mind.
Oh, ZZ Top.
Yeah, come on. ZZ Top.
The Grand first, Funk.
I was recently over at my buddy's house, Mark Maron, you know him?
And I think so.
He's a great comedian, but he put on that first ZZ Top Genius. On vinyl, and Genius. We just sat on the couch, and I was getting stoned off the music. You
and
know?
There's nothing. There's no effects.
There's nothing.
There's no real production. It's just those guys playing.
It's like they're right there in the living room,
man. No reverb, not much compression, nothing. It's just right
I wish
there.
They would listen to that record. You know,
because later on they got into that more, but I through great fortune, and he's a huge influence on me. ZZ Top is an influence, but Billy Gibbons especially.
Yeah,
and I got him to come one time. I asked him. I was doing my last solo record, and I said, Billy, what's the chance you maybe laying a solo down on that? He goes, sure. Wow. I couldn't believe he said yes. And so he shows up at my house. He pulls up out front. I almost had tears in my eyes. This guy's, he's who I got hammer-ons from and pinch harmonics and all that, was him.
Is that right?
Back in about 74, ZZ Top opened for Alice Cooper.
Right.
And I saw, we were right up close, and I saw him do it. And I went home on my bass, going, holy cow, this stuff might work.
That's where you got that?
Yeah, way before the Van
Halen. Wow, Hammond, man, that's incredible.
But, of course, Eddie took it way farther than anyone. But, He came over and laid a solo down. It was amazing. And
which guitar did he bring? One of those Gretches?
Here's the funny thing.
Okay.
This is a proof that it's in your hands.
Oh, yeah.
He came. He brought a guitar. I think he didn't think twice, and he just kind of grabbed one. And he got there, and it just wasn't the right guitar.
Right.
And it was strung a little heavy for him. And now I had hanging on my wall, somebody bought me a $150 Chinese fake Strat.
Yeah.
With the original factory strings on it, which I tuned down to B, 5 frets low. So the strings are just flopping around on there.
Yeah. Now, like Soundgarden tuning.
Yeah. So I use it to write on a bunch of stuff because it's just this big, heavy thing. So, Billy, check this out. So he used the $150 Strat with the original store bought strings tuned down. And the moment anybody hears it, I go, hey, check this out. Who do you think it is? I go, that's Billy Gibbons. They go right away.
I know guys. You put them on, I know guys. Yep. You know, you just know. And that's the same with comedy. These guys get their voices. They always say in comedy, you got to get your voice.
These
guys like Bill Burr, Richard Pryor.
I'm a big comedy fanatic from the earliest days.
Really? Who were you into?
Shelley Berman.
Wow.
Who's the guy with the... Paul...
Paul Mooney? Paul Lynn?
Paul Lynn, of course. Who did the telephone? Early guy, the first guy to do the telephone, had his own TV show.
I don't know.
Anyway, way early, all
you like
way
the early comedy early stuff.
And Woody Allen during his stand-up years,
right?
All the Bill Cosby stuff.
All the Bill Cosby,
and I was a comedy nut from
and way then, early. And then in the '70s, you get into Carlin and Pryor, Cheech and Chong, and
Richard
all that.
Pryor. Live in Long Beach.
Oh, yeah, the best.
Is the greatest stand-up performance I have ever witnessed. And I see so many, like when I hear bands playing stuff, and I go, wait, that came from another song from so-and-so.
Yeah.
You know they were influenced.
Yeah.
How many comedians I see nowadays, and I go, oh, they were watching Richard Pryor, because that's where they got that from. You know?
That's the special, because he's got the early one where he's in New York, and he's kind of Cosby. You know, he's trying to break away from Cosby or whatever. Then that one, and then Live on Sunset Strip. But that Long Beach one.
Unreal.
It's unreal, man.
That was the monkeys in the wood and the deer hunting.
Yeah, going hunting. You got the gun. I thought you got it. I just
Which
read
way are you going to run?
I read an interesting thing on that recently because I'm obsessed with that.
I've watched it 1,000 times.
Me too, man. I love it. You know how he just walks on and the lights are still on and everything? Well, they did two shows that night. And the first one, he completely bombed. like he was forgetting shit and whatever. So he goes backstage and they're seating the room for the second one. He goes, I got to go now. Because he, in his mind, was fixing the stuff and he didn't want to forget. He just walks right out. They're not even ready. Brilliant. That's why he's like, sit down, man.
The backstory. I'm so glad to hear it. Right? Man, it's amazing.
And then he murders.
Oh, he kills. It's performance art at its finest.
It really is.
And I show people that, and it blows. If they've never seen it before, it blows their mind.
That's great,
it's an amazing
man.
Amazing performance.
So your band Talus, like I said, they never really get big. You guys grind it out.
We have chances. We opened up for Van Halen about 30, 40
dates,
shows.
I saw that. Now what are we talking? Women and Children tour, right?
It was.
Right, 1980. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that tour in Oakland at the Oakland Coliseum. They played 3 nights.
Right on.
I remember it pretty damn well. Eddie had that bomb looking thing that was a keyboard.
Yeah, Michael had the bomb.
I remember that.
That was the same tour.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Probably one of the most spectacular records they did.
Yep.
And now, how do you get this tour? Because are you guys you're big on the East Coast, but you just don't have a deal?
It's kind of an interesting story. People that are hip to a lot of aspects of show business might find this a little bit interesting.
Right.
So we got two promoters in Buffalo, New York, who decided to be our band's manager because we were so big in Buffalo, we kind of outgrew everyone. So the only big people in the biz were these two promoters, Harvey and Corky Productions. It was
Harvey Weinstein?
Harvey Weinstein.
I knew it. Yep. You know, I knew that. I went to... it's funny because I've done some Weinstein films and stuff.
Yeah.
And Michael Cole, who produced the Stones tours I was on.
He used to be out of Cleveland, I believe.
That's correct.
Yep.
So I'm hanging with Harvey and Michael Cole. We're at this party and Michael's there. And I know Michael from the Stones tour. And they know each other. They go, oh, you guys know each other. They go, shit, we were promoters together in like Boston or something, you know, on the East Coast there.
Yeah, they did a lot of East
when you
Coast
weren't things. Even alive, man. They were like early Bill Graham, you know?
They were.
And I was like floored. It made me love Harvey even more because I was like, this fucking guy's been grinding it out.
No kidding. And I remember when they did their first movie, they just did this movie. I forgot the name of it, but it was some slasher film. And it didn't go well, but they realized, you know, we can license it to other countries and territories and make money. And then they did the reverse trick. Let's find other movies over there
and bring
license into America. And bang, that's how Miramax started. And that was the beginning of it. So
Harvey's your manager.
Yeah.
How fucking cool is this?
Then he gets a partner down in New York City named Brad.
Yep.
Brad Gray.
Is that the...
From Paramount.
Right.
The head of Paramount Films.
What the fuck?
So those were our two managers, Harvey Weinstein and Brad Gray.
And what kind of guy is Harvey back then? Is he the same, what the fuck, play this song?
No, Harvey gets the job done, one way or the other.
He's kind of like a Peter Grant.
He's a hard ass, but you can't get to where he gets and be a pushover or be
you
a
can't.
Nice guy or not that he's not a nice guy, but to be that effective in that field, you got to get 1,000 ducks walking in line. It's like herding kittens or chickens. So you really got to lay it down, and he did. And God bless him, he nailed it. He was so successful. I don't know. He probably doesn't have enough room for all of his Oscars at this point.
You ever talk to Harvey?
I've seen him in airports here and there. Is that all?
Yeah. That's wild, man.
Pretty
That's
cool.
probably my favorite thing I've heard that I don't know about someone.
That's funny.
That Harvey managed, you know, Talus. That is crazy. So how long does he manage you for?
Right up until he stuck with us after the Van Halen thing for a while, tried to get us deals. It didn't work out. He went on his way. We went on our
Did he get the Van Halen tour for you?
Yeah, he did.
That's amazing.
Because they dealt with Premier Talent, which was Van Halen's booking agent. And Harvey sent us down there for a showcase. They're in tight with Harvey. They want to do Harvey a favor. So it turns out, though, that they actually sent Ed Van Halen the cassette.
Yeah.
And he actually had to listen to it to see if he likes it. Yeah, they sound pretty good. Put them on. So we actually got band approval.
That's funny.
And they were really nice to us. But I'd never met them before. And I remember.
Were you listening to them?
Oh, we were such Van Halen. We were freaked out.
Of course, right?
Van Halen, are you kidding me? We love that band.
Yeah, 78.
Oh, that was it. So this is then the tour was 19. So we're on our first date there. We didn't get a sound check. You know, we're in a little dressing room waiting. You know, and. All of a sudden, and it's an L-shaped dressing room where I can see the door and no one else can, and where I'm sitting. The door opens up, it's Ed Van Halen walking in the door, and everybody said to me, man, you had this weirdest look on your face, and Ed walks up to me and he goes, which one of you guys is Billy Sheehan?
Man.
And I said, me, it's me.
Wow. That's so
I guess
cool.
Apparently I don't know who he knew me from. He may have known me through the Montrose drummer, Denny Carmassi.
Amazing drummer.
Because I had
right?
done some work with Michael Schenker and Denny.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll go all over the board here, but there's some crazy shit. One thing I didn't know was Addicted to That Rush, other than Shy Boy, was also a Talas song. Was that right? Addicted to That
no,
Rush?
No, that wasn't a Talas song.
Or did you write it?
I wrote it.
You wrote
we
it?
We never performed
but
it
you know, okay, I gotcha.
Yeah. When I write, I got zillions of titles.
Yeah.
I got page after page of titles and titles. None of them are songs.
Yeah. Oh, you just write titles down.
Just titles. And then eventually, hey, I had Addicted to That Rush for ages. And I said, hey, this might work on that. So I matched it up.
That's, I mean, you know, I often tell a lot of people when you play rock and roll and you're out on giant tours and stuff, the bar gets raised so high that as you get older, you get a little bored in life because you've seen such great shit.
Yeah, that's a funny thing. I've even heard a couple of pretty conservative political guys give a pass to a lot of athletes and people and entertainers that go out of their minds and do crazy stuff because how do you top, you know?
Yeah,
how
that's
do you,
true.
Well, you know, when you've got, you know, won the Super Bowl three times and, you know, won every, what do you do for excitement now, you know? So it's an interesting thing. But I never got, I smoked dope a little bit in high school.
Yeah.
That was about it. And
you didn't get into coke or anything?
No, I never tried cocaine.
That's crazy because you're rolling with some of the coke kings in your life. You know what I mean? And right. I mean, it's no secret, you know? But it's amazing because there are guys that just don't try it. And then other guys, to me, I was just like, whatever's here, let's this and take it somewhere else. And your idols are doing it. You're like, well, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I never, but I usually am the guy at the center of the party.
Yeah.
The first to get there and last to leave.
Yeah, I noticed that you're 60. And we're at the Improv last week.
We closed it down.
We walked out at 2:30. I was like, Billy rules.
No shit. It was fun. A million times at the Rainbow. Matter of fact, one of the times when Dave showed up there just a few years ago, and they closed the place, but they let us stay.
Yeah,
we had the whole center table, and we were hanging and drinking and drinking and hanging. It was so great.
Yeah. So, okay, so now you go out with Van Halen, and you guys are trying to get it going, and then there's the infamous story that Ed passes you that number.
Yeah.
I want you to try out in Van Halen. We're getting rid of Michael Anthony, which is crazy even back then, right?
Yeah, and it's I always feel bad when I'm around Michael because I love him, and I didn't want to be the guy.
Right.
But I think in retrospect, now getting the whole picture, I think what the plan was either to use me as pressure to get Michael to
step up.
change his deal.
Oh, I got you. His money deal.
Or bring me in and hire me as a sideman, and that would be another money thing.
That's a crazy thing. Money is a crazy thing in rock and roll, isn't it?
Because I love all those guys. I love Ed, Al, Dave, Mike.
It's interesting,
and they're not. They didn't do anything wrong. It's just it's the way the business works, you know.
It really is. It's weird because before Mike, they had another guy, I forget his name. What were they called?
Mammoth. Yeah.
So there's a kid, and I don't remember his name now, but somebody will email me that was a young drummer kid that Varney found, probably around 18, 19. He looked like Sebastian Bach. He could play great fucking drums. His dad was the bass player in Mammoth. I remember over at a party at his house, he goes, that's my dad right there when he was in Mammoth. And we're like, whoa, on bass.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that they go with Mike Anthony and seem to never be pleased with him the whole entire run.
But I got bootlegs of them
just
in the clubs. It's funny because it's almost the same set list we did in Talas.
Yeah.
Funk 49 by James Gang and all ZZ Top.
I got them too.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
And Michael kills. He's it playing kills. Great and singing his ass off. The whole band kills everything. So it was a tough spot for me, because as much as it would have been amazing to play in that incredible, iconic band, I love Michael. And plus, as a fan, I don't want to see him. I hate when anybody changes a member. You know?
Well, you're also talking about a time where if they would have changed a member, it would have really fucked things up.
Yeah, I think it would
have. Later on, after you got six records, whatever, but we're talking Women and Children era, and you're going into I think Fair Warning's next.
Yeah,
you're going into Fair Warning, and you change bass players and shit. You're just they've just Full Tilt Arena, you know, that run.
Exactly.
You make a change, and
wouldn't have been a good idea.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been a good idea, man.
It certainly made me feel good to know that they even thought about it for a microsecond.
That's great.
If they did, in fact.
Now, let's talk about opening on that tour. Yeah. I saw the openers, and that's the famous years any band I would see would just get shit thrown at them from the first song on.
Yeah.
This is before now. You need 3-4 bands to even sell a place out, and they're all good bands.
Right.
But back then it'd be Van Halen. I remember when I saw them, the band that opened was called The Fools. And they were just like, please welcome The Fools. And as soon as they came on, boo, just shit flying at them.
We never got a negative, and we even did a couple encores.
Now, were you only doing the East Coast?
We did. We started, I think, in Bismarck. And then we did, it was more tertiary markets, it was more a third level markets. We ended up doing San Diego. We did Oakland with them.
Right. Wow. See, I saw Oakland.
So, in the beginning of the tour, they may have done it without us, and then went back and did it again, possibly.
I'm just saying, I saw The Fools on one of the tours.
Okay.
I don't know who opened Women and Children, because back then the opener was in the car called Beer and Cocaine. I never saw the opener.
The only opener there was the beer opener.
That's right. You know what I mean? So I never really saw the openers. I'd usually run in right at the end of them. And
I remember because we had the t-shirts, Van Halen Destroyed Oakland, and we would wear them around in Buffalo. You know, we got to play with Van Halen.
Now, was that Women and Children David Lee Roth birthday with the cake that rolled out in the middle of the stage?
I don't recall that.
Yeah, that might have been Fair Warning then, because there's two runs of Oakland, you know?
Okay.
They do that famous run of Oakland where they did the Hear About It Later video and shit, those live vids. There's only like four.
Okay.
But MTV shot the whole show, then chopped it up into like four videos.
It was, what was the first one they did? So This Is Love was actually the first video I ever saw of them.
Yeah. So I got an Oakland scarf. He says that on there, you know. But man, that Women and Children record, it was incredible, right?
The Cradle of Rock.
So after that, you kind of fall apart. Harvey leaves and shit.
Yeah, Harvey was gone. We did our best. We tried to do a record in Woodstock, New York.
Yeah. Did you go to Woodstock?
No, I was. One of my friends went.
Right.
A buddy of mine, Rick, who was in school with me, but I was a little young. Rick was a little bit ahead of his time. I think he went with some older folks that he knew, but I remember hearing the radio ads for it, but I was too young. I would have gotten my mom.
Yeah, how old were you, think?
I think about 16 or 15 or something like that.
I was going to concerts at 13, 12.
Well, my first concert was Jimi Hendrix.
No shit?
Yeah.
So where?
In Buffalo, New York.
What are you kidding? Yeah. What year was that? What band?
I think it was 68. A Soft Machine opened up.
Soft Machine. I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
Who was in the band? What year?
Original
did you
lineup.
See him? Original lineup.
Yeah.
So do you see him the first run or after?
I think it was the second record tour.
I gotcha.
But he opened up with Fire, and it was it changed everything for me. You know, it was incredible. And
a good
Buffalo
buddy of mine.
A huge market for every big band came through Buffalo at one point.
That's right, right? It's like, that's a rock and roll city.
It really was. It really
my
was.
Buddy saw Hendrix, my buddy Ed Byrne, he played drums in my band.
Yeah.
He's way older, you know, but he saw Hendrix on the, with Buddy Miles.
Brilliant.
That band.
I love that band.
That New Year's Eve night.
Oh, God. I got bootlegs of the rehearsals.
Oh, I got it too. Isn't it great? Machine Gun is incredible.
Yeah.
When they're playing it. And Buddy Miles, man, just
what a groove. Probably the greatest rock groove ever, I think. Just brilliant.
Man, Buddy Miles.
Fantastic.
So after Talis, you play with UFO.
Yeah, 1983, UFO.
Who's in the lineup on this?
Is Paul Chapman on guitar, Andy Parker on drums. Phil Mogg was singing,
right?
Me on bass, and Neil Carter on keyboards.
Who was on guitar?
Paul Chapman.
Paul Chapman. Oh, I got you. I got
replacement.
Right.
And it was a rough thing because they were in bad shape.
Is that the Mechanics record?
It was the one right after that.
Okay, I saw the Mechanics
with the naked girl sitting on the thing.
Yeah, they're in bad shape. They've been in bad shape.
Yeah,
I think.
They were in rough shape. And the nice guys, Phil was gone. He was just really gone, and it was rough, and it was embarrassing some nights. He could barely function, you know. And I came out of a band where, you know, if somebody forgot one word in one chorus, we'd be looking, wait, what the hell's going on? You know,
yeah, James Brown style, right? You're fine.
We had our shit way together.
Yeah.
But it was an amazing experience, though. It was my first time to Europe. And prior to that, in 79, I'd worked with Michael Schenker because at Harvey Weinstein's Theater in Buffalo, a lot of times they would be short a band or somebody would make it over the border from Canada. So we went and opened for UFO.
Right.
Because AC/DC couldn't get across the border. It was AC/DC UFO. So we opened
That's
up.
Right. I got a pass of that.
Cool.
Yeah, like a sticker pass, man.
Brilliant. So we did, we opened up for UFO, and I talked with Michael. He saw me play. And then soon after that, he quit UFO and brought me over to London to do his first record.
Wow. You played on that?
No, it ended up, I didn't make it because he went out of his mind and shaved his hair off and smashed his guitar. And me and Denny Carmassi, who from Montrose, he was the drummer on it. We're supposed to go back, and Denny called me, and he was like, I don't want to go if you don't want to go. And I go, I ain't going if you ain't going. So we ended up not doing it because it was just, it was catastrophe. So then the UFO guys knew that I knew Michael. So when they found out, when Pete Way left, they called me to come and do that tour.
Now, when you're over there with Schenker, is it that MSG first record shit he's working on?
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, they reissued it and they put demos with me playing bass on
the
demos.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I just got those on vinyl, man.
Yeah, the rehearsals.
I saw that tour, the first run. I think it was Graham Bonnet vocals.
Yeah.
And then the next one, they had the other singer, that Macaulay guy or whatever.
Actually, the first singer was Gary Barden.
Gary Barden, right. Then
he was the guy we rehearsed with.
Then Graham Bonnet's Attack of the Mad Axe Man, and then they do that Macaulay Schenker.
Yeah,
there's like three records, but the first two are just unbelievable, like Armed and Ready.
And I had the original demos. They're the lost as for now. They may still turn up with Michael singing some of the words and doing the little demos in his house and everything. That they gave me to learn the record. So it was an interesting thing because I love UFO.
Yeah.
I love the band. So being associated with them in any capacity was really wonderful. But then I came home right after the UFO tour and saw Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
And it was not funny at all.
Wow.
I just lived it.
Yeah.
It wasn't until years later that I actually thought any of it was even humorous.
What kind of crazy shit was it? He was just booze, right?
Yeah, just tons of...
Tons of booze.
Well, that's what I could see.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a little naive on the drug stuff.
Well,
I don't know either
because you never hear that he's like doing drugs. The other guys were heroin, you know.
I don't know what was going on. But we were traveling through Europe too, so I don't know how easy it is to get stuff. But back then, 83, how tough the laws were, whatever. But they were just so out of it and so gone. And it was rough. I was there to do my best and... They had given up long before.
Yeah.
But wonderful people, though, and great guys. And I love the band, super talented. And I saw Phil Mogg recently, and he was cleaned up and doing well. So I'm glad about that.
It's tough when you don't party, and other guys are like, it's like you got third graders with you, right? Like, I party, but I knew how to keep rolling. I was just normal. Yeah.
I mean, now I pop a couple of bottles of red, three, four, five bottles of red, and I'm down with that, you know? We have a riot, you know, we always...
It's good shit, right?
Great. But, you know, I didn't want to go that much farther. I mean, I've been staggered several times, but I don't want to get to the point where... You know, I don't know who the hell I am anymore.
Yeah. Well, after UFO, of course, you join probably one of the most iconic records in my life,
Great.
Eat 'Em and Smile.
Right on.
Which is, it just gives me goosebumps, man.
Right on. Thank you. I must have signed about another 15 of them at the NAMM show last weekend. So everywhere I go on planet Earth, there's at least one, sometimes five, sometimes 10 or 20 in Brazil or Indonesia or anywhere. Those records are everywhere.
It's an epic record.
Right on.
And it's pretty insane because you're talking to a guy who is a David Lee Roth freak, but then I completely lose faith in him. Like I was telling you, like he does that EP and I'm just like, oh, what is this?
It was California Girls. And yeah. I liked it, but it was a left turn.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun, but not when you're growing up on Van Halen. Yeah. One,
Light
two.
Up the Skies. Yeah. And, you know, somebody get me a doctor.
Women and Children.
Oh, God.
Fair Warning.
Yeah. You're Coconut Grove. And
you
I'm
can kind of start to see it, though, in Diver Down.
Yeah.
You're getting a lot of covers, but... And even when I had you on last week when we did the live podcast, I slagged Skyscraper for a minute, and then I re-listened to it again. I've been listening to it again, and I was like, no, this record's great.
Yeah, it's good. For me, it's a little stiff. It's a little too microscopically analyzed, you know, because they really did put it under the microscope, where Eat 'Em and Smile, we just threw, you jumped in there, played, hung,
right.
You know, went out after, you know, Dave and I would go out with his bodyguard to a bar, and there'd be girls hanging out.
Yeah.
And go crazy and have a riot.
Now, how do you get this gig?
Dave called me out of nowhere.
He just calls you on your phone.
No, his guy called our manager.
Okay.
But it was a weird...
Pete Angelus?
Yeah. Called my guy in Buffalo. So, but it was a weird week because we got signed, Talas got signed by Gold Mountain Records that week, which was Danny Goldberg.
Right.
Who managed Nirvana.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a major, he still is a major, major guy. And the William Morris Agency signed us for live bookings.
Right.
And had us, and instantly booked us on the opening for the Yngwie Malmsteen's first tour.
Yeah, yeah. How great's that?
And then the same week, we had a call from David Lee Roth. And I should have bought a lottery ticket that week. It's the luckiest week of my life, you know. And
so, how old are you then?
Oh, I was, 85. I was 25, maybe around 25 or so.
Wow.
And it was amazing. So yeah. Dave brought me out here under the guise that it was a movie. He wanted me to be in this movie because he wanted it a secret. He didn't want me to go spilling the beans.
Oh, wait, because he hasn't left Van Halen yet?
No.
Well, this is incredible. I never even knew this story.
So,
wow.
So stupid me. I get in town to open up our first show with Yngwie at the Palladium
on
Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
And so Dave, as long as I'm in town, he's going to have the meeting with me. And so, stupid me, I said, hey, I'll call up Ed Van Halen and see if he wants to come down to the show.
Oh, no.
So, hey, Ed, hey, how you doing? He goes, hey, I'm playing in town tonight. Maybe you might want to come. And he goes, oh, I don't know. We're pretty busy. I go, yeah. He goes, yeah, I'm going to have a meeting with Dave tomorrow. He goes, what? You're going to what? And I go, yeah, he's doing a movie or something. And
oh,
I go,
no.
You're kidding. Wait, you got to call me in for the meeting right away because I think he's going to pull an Ozzy Osbourne. You know, they leave and get, you know, other guys.
Wow.
And so I go, well, okay, I'll see what happens. So sure enough, the next day, I'm out of Dave's house. He goes, let's start a band. All right, let's get a guitar player, drummer, and let's do it.
No shit.
And so I said, I can't call Ed now and tell him that.
No, no.
And then betray Dave. So I never called Ed back.
Oh, my God. I've never heard that story. Yeah.
And so Dave even came down on the shows. And, of course, he's backstage, and the rumors started flying. And
yeah.
The original guitarist was supposed to be Steve Stevens.
Is that right?
Yeah, Dave.
I never even knew that.
Yeah, Dave liked what he did. I like what he did. Everybody does.
From the Billy Idol, Rebel Yell stuff, yeah.
It didn't quite work out. So I told Dave, I know another Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody snapped a photo of Steve and I in the rainbow just as I was telling him. And I couldn't tell him for real, but I was saying, you know, there's a thing coming up that you might be interested in. I can't tell anything about it right now, but we'll get in touch with it. And he goes, I think I know what it might be. So,
wow.
Somebody snapped a photo right then.
That's crazy.
Looking over at the guy with the photo. And then, sure enough, Steve came down, the perfect guitarist.
It's pretty interesting that Steve Vai could write some of those songs because, you know, he's in Zappa.
Yeah.
You know, and he's...
Zappa sense of humor helped.
That's right, yeah. But I'm saying you don't... Zappa's writing all the songs, you know what I'm saying? So you're not hearing any Steve Vai songs.
Yeah, well, he came from, we had a very parallel childhood, even though we never knew each other. We listened to a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah.
So when we were writing down in the basement, we'd say, you know what, you know, a party, you know, kind of like a Bowie, you know, that one Bowie song that goes, yeah, it's kind of like that. Oh, it's kind of like a Hendrix thing. You know, we'd communicate like that.
Yeah.
And explain to each other. And Dave would be upstairs doing business, and we'd be down, me, Greg, and Steve be down there practicing away. And he'd go, hey, good, that sounds like a verse. So keep that. No, make a chorus. And okay, good chorus. Now find a bridge. You know,
wow.
We just threw the record together like that.
Are you guys just living at Dave's house at the time?
No, Dave's office had me at the Oak Woods. Steve lived out in Sylmar at the time. And Greg Bissonette lived out in the valley here somewhere as well.
Was there a different drummers auditioned also, or was it Greg?
Originally a guy named Chris Frazier.
Chris Frazier, who's that?
Worked with Steve Vai on a couple of his early records. Great right. drummer. He's since played more recently with Whitesnake and a bunch of bands.
Right.
He's a great, great player. But for some reason, Dave wanted to find some new blood because yeah. I guess he had worked with Steve a lot before.
Yeah.
We actually even brought in one of the Talas drummers, a guy named Mark Miller, flew him in to try.
Wow.
But his heart wasn't in it because he was kind of a homebody and he was out of his element. So
wow.
That was it. But sure enough, we went looking for drummers, and we put in ads in the papers. We couldn't say who it was for, and there was a line of drummers around the block at SAR.
Yeah, and what did it say, the ad?
I forgot. Just like, I forgot. You know, it was just like, you know, look for a drummer for a professional touring band, blah, yeah. blah, blah, recording.
Must him. Have look and chops.
Remember that one? We didn't even go that far.
I know, but it always says that on the on the recycler. Must have long hair and chops. A van, a puss.
Brilliant.
That's how Dave got Van Halen, right? He had the PA.
I heard that. So we went in, we had drummer after drummer come in, and it's funny, they say this, maybe you will know this better than I am, but I've talked to a director one time as a buddy of mine. He says when they cast a movie, they know as soon as they see the guy.
Right.
They don't have to have him read. They yeah. read and go through the formality, but as soon as they see the guy, they know he's the guy.
Yeah.
And sure enough, Greg Bissonette walked in, and we knew he was the guy.
That's crazy,
and
right?
We instantly just knew he was the man.
Wow.
And sure enough, we had him down to the basement 2 days later. He had already learned every song we had completely.
Oh, you had like a demo already?
Yeah, we had a little cassette demo from the basement.
Wow. He learned and what all. Was on that? Like Shy Boy and shit like that?
Most of all Eat 'Em and Smile and a few other things.
Wow.
We almost did a version of Rory Gallagher's Secret Agent.
Right.
Secret Agent Man. Not the Johnny Rivers Secret Agent Man.
Yeah.
Though it may not be Secret Agent Man. I think it's just Secret Agent. And also was a guy in Canada, Kim Mitchell.
Yeah, I read that. You did. You called him up, needed the second verse or something.
We almost did a song of his called Kids in Action. I think there was a demo made of that.
Yeah, and then Tobacco Road bumps it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those two didn't end up on the record. So, and that was it. We went to New York City at the Record Plant, I think.
Yeah. And then you worked in Fantasy in Berkeley?
Fantasy in Berkeley.
What were you guys
and
doing
Capitol.
There? Were you tracking it?
We
Fantasy?
Tracked most of it, I think, in Fantasy.
I would have shit my pants.
Which later on was the studio for Mr. Big.
Yeah, yeah. And I would have shit my pants if I was walking around and ran into Dave at Berkeley in 19. What year was that? 85.
Yeah.
Comes out in 86.
Yeah.
I remember it comes out 86, 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
A genius.
Yankee Rose.
You know, the video with Pete Angelus, the Picasso brothers.
Hilarious.
At what point are you guys rehearsing and Dave goes, this is going to work, I'm going to quit Van Halen? Does he just go,
he was already kind of, he had already made it done. But when you started to say that, I wasn't sure what you were going to ask for. But I remember we were rehearsing in Perkins Palace in Pasadena.
Yeah.
It had it closed off. And I'm on stage and we're doing some of the Van Halen songs we're putting in the set.
Oh.
We're doing I'm on Fire.
Oh, God.
And me and Dave are singing there, I'm on fire. I was singing the part, and Dave's over next to me singing, I'm on fire. And all of a sudden it dawned on me, holy shit. I'm like, with David. I mean, it didn't really sink in.
Wow.
We're on stage doing the
rehearsing for the tour.
And there's Dave. And it's like, holy cow, this is unbelievable. And I got to say, he's still my hero. I love that guy.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest break Steve, Greg and I ever got, and we went to bat for him too. We stuck up for him and did, and anything he wanted from us, we gave him. And it was an amazing. It changed after Skyscraper,
right.
Sadly for the worse. But I disregard that completely. The great time we had on Eat 'Em and Smile, on the tour.
Yeah, who was on that tour? Cinderella opening or was it Poison?
Cinderella opening, and
that,
then,
I think
and
that's
then
the
Tesla.
One I saw. Yeah. Cinderella,
Tesla, and then Cinderella.
Right.
And that's where I met some of the guys in Tesla who knew later on, who knew Eric. So when I started playing in Mr. Big with Eric, we had some common ground there as well.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that's got to change your whole life.
Oh, my God.
I mean, now, what about Dave? I'm a huge Dave fan.
Me too.
But it seems to be right around Diver Down, he stops singing. He turns into that, look at all the people here tonight. And
yeah, I don't know. It's
I'm just trying to figure it out, because when I saw him early on, man, we're talking...
I still love his voice.
Yeah, me too.
God, what a voice. Great
this
voice.
Guy would sing like crazy, but somewhere along the way, he feels... I understand he's the rock front man, he's the showman stuff, but I'm like, sing these songs, dude. Yeah, sing, yeah. You know?
Yeah, as a fan, I was always a little disappointed, but he did his shtick so good that, you know... When,
yeah,
you know,
I get it.
I forgot the fucking words. He said that every night at the same place. Absolutely. It was part of the shtick of that course. He forgot the words, you know? And brilliant showmanship, and set the course for frontman from then on. You know?
Oh, he's the... there's no frontman better. If you take David Lee Roth, 1980, Women and Children, and even the next one, Fair Warning...
Untouchable.
The thing I like about him then, though... is he's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's when I love Dave, because at some time he'd be like, fuck you, motherfucker, you know, I'll fuck your girl, whatever.
Yeah, right.
But he also had like badass moves. He was singing songs like On Fire or Mean Streets or Unchained. You're like, man, this guy's dangerous. He's Hollywood. He rides a Harley. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right,
he's fucking sick. And then later he becomes the party guy. I get it, because it's selling and MTV's a big party world.
Could be. I never analyzed it much. I remember I went to see them up in Toronto. On the Fair Warning tour.
Incredible, right?
Amazing. And Toronto's a little different, though, because it's Canada, and they're not, you know, they don't quite, you know, Van Halen isn't their band. They're from another country.
Oh, that's so weird,
and
right?
So I remember Toronto's a great, great audience.
No, I get it.
Van Halen like that. Plus, I heard there was a little tiff between Van Halen and Rush.
Oh, yeah,
so Rush owns Toronto, so I think a lot of people in Toronto are like, hey, wait a minute.
Well, Dave would always clown, like, nerd rock, like Elvis Costello. Remember, he's like, he's like, reviewers love him because he looks like the reviewer. You know, shit like that. He was great.
They did a thing where they would stop, like, the second song, and Dave would just stand there, and the crowd would just go crazy, 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 just not move and stand, and the crowd would just roar and roar and roar. So in Toronto... he stands there, bang, the band stops, spotlights are on him, not much.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God, I'm watching him with my heart in his throat. He didn't blink an eye.
Yeah.
He stayed right there. The crowd, you hear it, bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, confidence wins.
Man, he nailed it. It was one of the most amazing scenes I've ever seen played out in an arena.
Wow.
Incredible.
Confidence wins, right? I mean, Brilliant. You play with the best front guy ever, know?
Amazing.
Now, how much of Skyscraper do you play on? All of it?
I played on everything except for Paradise.
Paradise.
They ended up using the synth bass only. I played along with the synth bass. Ding, 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 like that. It was very challenging for me to do that.
What was the studio like then during that time? You got Steve Vai, right? He's producing.
Yeah, it was Dave and Steve, and Greg came in, did his drums, left.
And then his brother's in the band, right? Was he playing the keys?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't there yet. It was Brett Tuggle.
Oh yeah, that's the guy that's writing the tunes and stuff with him.
And I'd come in and do bass and leave. And it wasn't a band situation anymore.
How does it change in 2 years?
It's a funny thing, because we were on the road and it was a riot and having a blast. And I believe it's people around Dave.
Yeah,
it was Dave.
Like voices in the air, like Pete Angelus. You got to get going. You know, Van Halen's killing with the synth stuff, you know?
Yeah, so who knows?
Yeah, but, who does know?
Yeah, I actually don't. So, but it was, I didn't like the record. I didn't like the process. I was unhappy with it. And so they just said, well, let's part ways. And they brought in Greg's brother, Matt, who's a fine bass player and a good guy. But I remember hearing stories from Steve and Greg, because we get a reunion dinner almost every year. Me, Steve Vai, Greg Bissonette, Brett Tuggle get together and just have a dinner.
That's fucking awesome.
It's hilarious. The stories we tell.
Wow.
Greg's out with Ringo now, so the stories he's got are unbelievable.
Oh my God.
Steve's touring out all the time. Yeah, I'm doing my thing. And Brett, so we get together, and it is hilarious.
Yeah.
So we as a matter of fact, we tried to call Dave.
Yeah.
The last time we did it, but we never got to it. I forgot what I was getting to when I brought that up, but...
you were talking about you heard stories from Greg. He was
So when they were on that tour, it just was not fun at all.
Yeah,
and then Steve quit like right about in the middle of it, and stayed with it in order to fulfill his commitment. But he didn't want to be involved in it anymore either.
Right. Who joined at that? Jason Becker, right? And then he gets struck down when he gets sick and stuff. Yeah, that's a bummer, man.
That's a drag, poor kid. But
you know what? I mean, as much as people love to see Dave back in Van Halen, man, it would be sick to see that Eat 'Em and Smile lineup go out and do a summer.
Would love to.
I think it would fucking smash.
30 or 40 shows.
I swear it would smash.
Would be a riot. Would be a riot.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Really, with just the fucking whole thing, man.
And don't leave Van Halen. Just take a break. Come out and do 30 or 40 shows.
Plenty of time to do this, you know?
Would be right. And I'll tell you, we'd make a lot of people happy.
Oh, my God.
Every day I get an email. Every day there's a post.
I saw that shit at the Cow Palace.
Yeah.
You know? And it's iconic gigs, you know?
So cool. And we really had so much fun on that tour. And there were so many things that were grandfathered over from the Van Halen days. Like we had the... We had the barricade in front of us.
Yeah, with the numbers.
With the numbers.
Yeah.
Where we'd
explain that.
We'd say to the we'd see like a hot babe.
Yeah.
And section 16, you know, two rows back, we go over to the side of the stage of the security guy, a blonde blue top, section 16, two rows back, and he got his radio, blonde to blue top, section 16, and sure enough, a few other. Handoffs of that message, and we see a guy walk out to section 16, reach with a pass on, put it on the girl.
Man.
And there she was.
And now that's like full major leagues all of a sudden.
It's beautiful.
What else is carried on? I mean, first of all, you got to just be getting chicks every night, right?
It was a beautiful thing, but I got to say, and I'm not saying that because we're recording it, because this is true, and I would say that if we were hanging out here with nothing recording and a glass of red wine, we never did any disrespectful, evil, horrid shit.
No.
You know, we were always cool with girls because they were cool with us. For me, it was an honor.
Yeah.
I was honored.
You saw the infamous Steve Vai girl, right? Me and Scott Tunis talked about it.
I don't remember that.
Oh, I'll tell you about it later. It's on one of the episodes. Anyway. But yeah, the girls are part of it, right?
I know. I was so glad. You know, if some girl is kind enough to hang out with me and we do our thing, thank you.
Yeah.
I'd see some of the crew guys through the years are like, I did that. And say that, you know, kind of mean spirit. And I thought, and I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? I build my business on repeat customers. Come on, let's. This is amazing. So we would, we just had a riot. And a lot of those girls from back then, I still hear from them once in a while.
On Facebook
and
shit.
They got kids and they're still my friend. I'm married now. I don't ship around.
Yeah.
But it's good. You know, they're still our friends after that. And we had such a glorious
Yeah,
time.
I think that the groupie thing gets a bad rap because of what at once like kind of grunge kicks in and alternative. They really wanted to change the flavor of everything.
Yeah.
It was like, well, we don't fuck around with girls. That's disrespected and we don't wear outfits and we, you know, and we go in a van or whatever. You know, whatever you're saying. I understand it. But that's all marketing too that people don't understand.
Yeah, because in fact, behind the scenes, it was probably no different at all.
Mad chick.
I know some bands now they have the stripper pole in the bus.
Right? Stripper pole in the bus.
True.
That's fucking funny.
Pretty amazing. So but we had a riot and it was beautiful and the girls were just gorgeous and amazing and thank you all so much. It was beautiful.
That's great. Let's talk a little bit about your gear. You started out on a P bass.
Yeah, the typical iconic Fender P bass. Played that most right up through Eat 'Em and Smile and into Mr. Big. I started working with Yamaha in '84 and they started making me basses. We finally replaced my bass finally fully around 1990.
Yeah,
with the Attitude basses that
What made you choose Seafoam Green? That's one of my favorite. That's Seafoam Green, right?
Because it was an iconic color and a California color.
I really love it, man.
And I love living in Los Angeles so much. After I love Buffalo too, my hometown. But once you spend time in L.A. and the weather, it's just so. I really love my time here in L.A. So the Seafoam Green was kind of
Seafoam Green, spectacular.
Beautiful.
And then scalloped neck, right?
Couple of the frets.
Yeah, people don't know what that is, but
they take the wood away between the frets, so your fingers don't touch the wood. You can get a kind of a higher bends and more stuff, you know.
Yeah,
you know, a bass works fine without it, but I just happened to put it on my old P bass, and they took all the modifications I did on my old bass and grandfathered them into my Attitude bass.
Right.
So we have all that stuff and more, better neck to body joint, and I'm on my third version of it now.
That's great.
And it's doing wonderful. All the Attitude bass owners made their own Facebook
page. Their own blogger. That's Facebook page. That's dope.
So I go up there and we talk and chat and I answer questions and talk about mods and stuff. And it's a nice little community. Last summer before last, we went out and had a Yamaha Attitude Bass Day at the Yamaha Custom Shop in Burbank. And people flew in from all over the world, bring their Attitude basses. Yeah. I brought all my basses, all the prototypes,
wow,
my original P-Bass, its sister, all the, you know, and they could play all the stuff, pick it up, and do their thing with it. And it was
that's
really
cool. That's
cool
shit, right?
A cool day.
You get to fly out and meet your Billy Sheehan, you know, if you love that guy, and then play his bass.
Yeah, the original, it's referred to as the wife.
That's original. What I read. Yeah.
But some kid, and a couple have done this, they made a duplicate of it. And he brought it with him. I'll tell you, if I would have looked away a minute and looked back, he probably could have switched them out of me. I might not have known right away, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, Gibson does those Murphy, like, and same with Fender.
Yeah,
where they'll get Gibson got Billy Gibbons' guitar, and they do the laser specs of it and everything. And
incredible.
Then Tom Murphy tweaks every little thing on it, and you've got Pearly Gates in your hand.
Brilliant.
Of course, it doesn't have the million years, but I played a lot of Murphy Pauls, and I really want that Joe Perry one they have right now.
Brilliant.
It's just, these guitars are great. They could easily make your guitar exact, you know?
Yeah, who knows? Maybe someday
they will.
It's like
cloning.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
Yeah, it's brilliant. I had the guys who did the remix, I had a bunch of skateboard stickers on my bass. Not so much when I was a way early adopter of skateboarding. I was in with the metal wheel skateboarding way early.
Oh, man,
I swear to God.
Metal wheels.
We took some falls on that.
Yeah.
Way early days. But the reason I had the skateboard stickers on there, because I would get so wet and there's no finish left on the base and I didn't have time to refinish it. So I put the skateboard stickers on there to try and keep the wood dry.
Wow, no shit.
It was soaking wet.
What's your amp? What's the amp you use?
I'm using Hartke amps now.
Oh, yeah. Metal speaker?
They do a half and half now.
Oh, I got you.
But I'm using the paper version.
Right.
So I've tried the half and half. I might switch to that. They did metal for a long, long time. I liked them, but when they came out with the paper and they sent them to me to try, because I was with Ampeg for years and years and years, and they somebody bought out the company, they started manufacturing in China, and the quality is just not what I remember it to be.
Yeah, so. Those early SVTs would catch fire, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that, like, what was
I've
that?
I've seen a spark and smoke come pouring out.
My bass player would have one, and we'd call it BF. We'd be like, which song is he going to have bass failure? And then you'd just turn around, the shit would be on fire.
They had these giant tubes in them.
Yeah.
And the filaments were delicate. When you'd move it around, the filaments could move and hit each other and short out and spark.
Oh.
Or even break off and fall down and hit the pins. And yeah, I've seen some fireworks coming out of those things. It's amazing.
I like that stuff that Gene Simmons was using in the late 70s, early 80s, the Sun stuff.
Yeah, Sun was another
18s and shit.
Iconic amps, Sun, acoustic.
Yeah.
A lot of great Fender bass amps, but Ampeg was the king. Ampeg was the bass, Marshall was the guitar.
That's correct.
Sad to see them in the state they're in now.
So they don't have, like, all amps are made in China, but then, like, Marshall will have the handmade ones, you know, they're hand-wired, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if Ampeg does that.
Yeah, because, you know, there's, like, boutique versions of Marshall now.
Yeah.
And then they got the junky ones, you know.
Some of them are stamped out.
But some of the new stuff, like these Marshalls that they reissue that are exact to the old Plexis and stuff, they're incredible.
Yeah, great. A lot of the new old Fender amps, too, are pretty awesome. Richie Costa's been using a lot of the Fender stuff on the Winery Dogs.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Now, you and I ran into you in Japan in 06 or whatever. You didn't know me, but I knew Richie.
Yeah.
And I'm out with the Stones, and I turn and look, and boom, there you are playing with Richie back then. That and you said that's not the Winery Dogs. That was just Richie did a record.
Yeah, he did a solo record, and the record company that he did it with in Japan was kind of a soundtracky thing to a Gundam, which is some anime thing. The record company happened to also be the promoters of bringing the Stones in.
Yeah.
So they didn't think of it, but Richie said to them, you know, why don't you have me open it up? And they thought, well, great idea. Why didn't you guys think of that?
Yeah.
And so he said, you want to come over to me and with me and we did about 5 or 6 shows, I think.
Yeah.
With the Stones.
Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
Was the one I saw you guys at.
Amazing.
Yeah. Japan's great, right?
Incredible. I always tell people, if you want to go to someplace exotic and like being on another planet, but still not have your life endangered and have it
Japan.
Clean, it's amazing.
Isn't Tokyo phenomenal, man?
City of the future.
I swear to God, like, if you're like into rock and roll, or you like rock and roll clothing, or you like, any kind of thing, they mimic everything and they do it perfect.
Perfectly.
You know, like you'll go into one store and it'll be all like, James Dean 50s clothes. Yeah. And they'll just be perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Then you'll go to another one. It'll be the Billy Sheehan store, you know, and they'll have your shit that you wear.
It's amazing. We, one thing I remember the first time I tried Macallan Scotch, which I haven't really liked very much. There was a British pub across from the hotel in Fukuoka, Japan, which is a nice little seaside town there, a beautiful place. And our crew went across the street to the pub. So when Japan does something, they do it so exact. When
they
you
do.
Went in, it was exactly a British pub.
It's crazy, right?
Except it didn't smell like vomit and pee.
Right.
You know, so that was the one thing.
Yeah.
And the bathroom was like spotless. You could do brain surgery in there. But I remember I had my first taste of Macallan because the crew guy said, "We got to try this." I go, so he pours a shot. "How much is it?" He goes, "It's $75, but I'm buying, so you got to try it." And a $75 shot of Macallan, and it was,
wow,
like heaven. It's unbelievable.
But that's how Japan is.
Yeah.
Like, you'll go into one place, and it'll be like, "Oh, this is a California surf store, 1980, you know, OP or whatever."
They've got everything.
No, I have like Dogtown skateboards and OP shorts. And say, "Yeah, what the fuck?"
And they bought up a lot of the vintage instruments.
They did. Back in the 90s, they were buying them all.
Yeah, and Japan was their economy was on fire. So you go over there now and you see all these instruments for sale. And I know the price is going to come down.
I know. Totally.
Come down. They'll probably be re-importing them back in.
Yeah, you're right. You know, vintage guitars got a little stupid about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
New York Times recently called vintage guitars still, this year, one of the best investments with your money ever.
Well, amazing.
Yeah, and they showed like a list of 20 you can buy. I worship vintage guitars. Like, yeah. To me, it's about the 59, the 58 Paul. Those are the two. And then the 60 Strat with the slab board, clay dots, that stuff. Do you have any vintage instruments?
I got an old Telecaster bass.
That's it.
From 68, which was
that's some Billy or ZZ Top, Dusty Hill. What's his name? Dusty Hill. Yeah.
I got that. I've got an Epiphone Rivoli bass, which is what Paul Samuel Smith used in the Yardbird. They also use it, I think, in the bass player in the Jam.
Right.
Use a Rivoli bass, iconic bass. But that's about it. I never got into collecting. I was always smart with my money. I never got into collecting stuff.
Did you
like
save
that.
Your money?
I saved a lot of money.
Wow. That's pretty wild, right?
I know. I never collected cars or did anything stupid or had a bad drug habit or a lot of crazy girlfriends spending my money. So I lucked out, you know. So
you're a simple man.
Yeah, a couple more years, I'll pay my house off. I'll be all right.
That's fucking great, man.
And then the
party
starts.
I mean, you're 60. You've been playing rock since 1970, right?
Yeah, I actually was in bands from about 1968.
Wow.
Played professionally from 71.
That's genius.
Right on.
I mean, there's only a handful of guys that do that, right?
Yeah, and I'm so thankful that the dice were rolled and that number came up and everything. Turns out a guy around the corner from my street was a bass player, was influenced on me then, and I got into that. And Buffalo was a perfect time to grow up for music, and it was just everything was lined up pretty well for me. So I'm supremely thankful for that.
I got some Twitter questions. Let's get these, and then I'll get you out of here. I don't want to keep you all night, but. What I told you a couple nights ago, you got to be the nicest rock star I've ever met. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's probably why you work.
You catch me on a bad day, you'll know what to
do. I'm waiting to see that. Okay, here, first one, Gary Tuttle Jr. Ask him about the time with porno star Savannah.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, my buddy went out with Savannah. Did you go out with her?
Yeah.
Wow.
Actually, I went out with her when she was Shannon, before she was Savannah.
Okay, gotcha.
Matter of fact, I met her at the Ventura Theater Mr. Big played. I'd just broken up with one girl. Met her that night.
Yeah.
We hung out. And
she was alive back then?
She was gorgeous. Gosh,
oh, yeah.
She was beautiful.
Hell yeah.
And so she hadn't had nothing done yet, no work or anything. As far as I know, she hadn't done any movies or anything yet at all. And that was all kept on the QT for me. I didn't know about it.
Right.
So she came. She pretty much lived with me for about 5 or 6 months. We're doing the Rush tours with Mr. Big. And things started getting a little crazy, though, at some point. And it turns out a business associate of mine, his wife worked for Larry Flint Publications.
Oh, yeah.
So she knew the inside. So she calls me. I go, "Did you know Shannon signed a deal?" I go, "What kind of a deal?"
Yeah.
"To do some movies?" I go, "Get the fuck out of here. Are you kidding me?" Unreal.
Unreal,
so
right?
That day.
That's your girlfriend.
So I'm in the apartment, and she comes in. And I go, I just thought, okay, here we go. So I said, "Hey, babe, how you doing?" She goes, "Did you think I wasn't going to find out?"
Yeah.
And she goes, "Find out what?" you know. And the look on her face was, oh my God.
Wow.
And it, so I didn't want to get involved in that situation. So yeah. It was sad. I broke my heart.
That's crazy, right? Oh. Like, I mean, she didn't need money. She was living with you, right? That's an ego thing then, right? That's, I want to be a star too. Billy's a star.
She was damaged in some way, but she was a sweet, beautiful girl. And then after that, she left, got her own place. Next thing, she showed up with a brand new car. They fronted her $30,000. She started doing movies and stuff like that. But then I realized that she was doing some stuff on the side that I didn't know about while she was with me.
Wow.
The dress she always wore.
Yeah.
Check this out. Talk about a heartbreaker.
Yeah,
this is so bad.
Oh, I love it.
So I'm in New York City walking down the street, and there's a newsstand,
uh-huh.
and there's Shannon,
uh-huh.
full face shot on the cover with a guy's in her mouth.
Oh.
Wearing the dress
that
she wore. And I thought, oh, my God.
No. She did porn in her street duds.
Yeah.
And like a regular. Yeah. That's wild, so, right?
It was. But then, sad ending, of course.
Totally.
I finally got in touch with her. Years went by, and she apologized to me because of everything that went on. And then she'd lied to me and had done stuff to me behind my back and blah, 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 and all those things. So I said, don't worry. I just want you to, you know, come around. I heard you, she was with a heavy drug situation. So
right.
if you need my help, I'm here for you, blah, blah, blah. That was just before the earthquake. The earthquake hit. And
89
then,
or 92.
And then I think the summer after that,
wow.
she ended up taking her own life.
That's sad heavy. Thing.
Yeah.
That's a good story, though.
There's more to it, trust me.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. I'll tell you later.
Here we go. My buddy Jordan, he's the number one Del Razor here. Were there any bands you auditioned for that you didn't get the gig because it just wasn't a good fit?
Well, I never auditioned for a band. We were talking about that the other day.
Wow, yeah, I just got calls.
I never did auditions.
Oh, man, that's
either
dope.
I started the band myself or somebody brought me in.
Yeah.
You know?
You think it was a mistake to let Roth, for Roth to let Vi have the reins of Skyscraper?
I love Steve.
Yep.
And Steve's a brilliant producer, but not for that kind of music.
Right.
I think for what Steve does in a Zappa-esque and a fine-tuning thing, Steve didn't grow up playing Three Dog Night and Grand Funk Railroad and James Gang, and that's kind of what you need for that. I love Steve more than my brother. In
right.
fact, he was a dear, dear friend. I just saw him Monday night. We had a great dinner together, and I just don't think it was the right thing at the time. And also, it was one of his first big production jobs.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, you're coming off a 2 million seller, Smile. There's a lot of heat coming down.
Yeah. I think in some ways he did really great work on it in some respects, but
where was that recorded at?
We did most of that at Capitol Records right down the street.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's badass.
Yeah.
Oh, were you the one that told me that story? You guys were going for a walk and someone pulled up to you, tourists, yeah. and said, hey, we're lost. And it was David Lee Roth going,
Dave
you go
over,
down here. All
puts
right.
his arm in the car and makes sure he gets his head right in there so they can see who it is. And he's giving them like, yeah, you take a left down there and the look on their faces, they're realizing, oh my God, it's David Lee Roth.
That's so California.
See, that's why. That's another reason I love right. Dave. He's just amazing.
This is a great question, and I'm glad this guy asked it. Alex Castino. How did you feel playing Mandatory Suicide last week with the Slayer members?
Ah, great.
That's one of my favorite Slayer songs.
What a riot. It's not my thing. I don't do that hard, heavy metal. But I love all kinds of music, and some of the heaviest heavy there is, I'm into. And Slayer is that, you know?
Yeah.
And I wasn't real familiar with a lot of the stuff, but it was great being challenged by having to do it and play it authentic. Not me trying to play Slayer, but play it like Slayer.
Yeah.
Play it like them. Play it like they play it. The same with the Pantera song or any of the Anthrax stuff or any of the things that we did. I wanted to play it how they did it. I want them to be happy with what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that was cool. And a great bunch. All the Anthrax, Pantera, Exodus, Testament guys were on this
Chuck
time.
Billy, yeah.
Oh, fuck. That was so great.
Yeah, I watched it. It was incredible. They had a 3-camera shoot on that. It was up like the next morning.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. But it's a great bunch of guys. And they
you
got
to be like one of those guys, like the race car driver, and then you get in there and it's just like, you know, dun, 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 instead of like, you know what I mean?
It was cool. And a lot of the high speed stuff, you got to really, you know, most of it is played with a pick. So to do it with your fingers is another thing.
Yeah.
It was a riot. We had a blast. I remember when Slipknot lost their bass player a while back, I always thought, you know, I would do the tour, and I would do it anonymously too. I didn't want even people to know that I did it. But just the experience of playing something like that,
yeah,
and doing it in a situation like that would be, you come out of it a better musician, no matter what.
Well, the energy of Slayer and early Metallica, and even I had Josh Fries on yesterday. We were talking about the energy of Nine Inch Nails. What that brings to you, man, when you're playing that and the crowd's giving back.
Oh, can't be duplicated by any other means.
You can't, man. Nope. There's no better. That's why you don't need drugs. As cliche as that sounds.
I know.
I used to get high a lot and perform, and now I perform totally straight and as a comedian, and the rush I get from the power of like these fuckers
it's unbearable.
Laughing right
overwhelming
now. Yeah, and great. That's the same thing, right? You're up there and you see incredible. The power of mandatory suicide. You're going like, wow, right?
It was cool. And that's the crowd went nuts.
Oh, God.
At the House of Blues. There was a full-on circular mosh pit.
The pit.
Guys, the shirts were off. And
that shit's some man stuff, right?
I loved it. So cool.
Okay, one more, and then I'll get you out. Let's see. This guy, I guess I'll go with his question, Will Johnson. He says, you have such a unique style of playing bass. Do you ever feel overlooked when compared to other bass players? Which I don't think you're overlooked at all.
I'm so pleased that people have given me any recognition at all.
Yeah. I think you're one of the top five. Like, if you're at the NAMM show, it's Billy Sheehan for sure that the people are talking about.
Yeah, thanks. I've got there was a poll. There's a Player Magazine is a magazine in Japan. It's about an inch thick of glossy paper.
Oh, I love
it. Great.
All Japanese mags. Once again, amazing.
Amazing.
Any Japanese magazine.
Brilliant.
$20 worth it.
The artwork. And I like to look through it anyway, just because to see all the gear and stuff. Even though I can't read what it's about, at least I'll get a website address and look it up. But they had their readers poll. I won it for 27 years in a row.
Fuck.
And finally.
27 years.
So finally, at the last one, I said, look, you guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to recuse myself, as a judge would say. I'm gonna remove myself from the contest. Let somebody else win.
27 years.
So I couldn't be more thankful. So they had me. I do a column in the magazine every month now, and I'm not sure if in the poll they say you can't vote for Billy Sheehan because he stepped out of the race anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But I won for 20.
Well, I mean, you're just Hall of Fame. You know, after a while, it's like, look, okay, we're putting him up on this shelf here.
So that stuff like that, it is just to have something like that happen in your life. It's an amazing thing. So I appreciate that people listen to what I do. I'm glad that they enjoy what I do. I work hard to make it so they'll enjoy what I do. I don't want to pander to an audience.
Nope.
But I want them to be happy. I want to think of something that they're going to dig, you know? And nothing pleases me more to have a whole audience full of smiling faces. And when that happens, mission accomplished, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what a great dude you are. So glad
to. Takes one to know one, Dean.
Oh, man. Winery Dogs, what are you guys doing? You're on a little break right now.
Yeah, we took off for the holidays. We're starting up. We got Monsters of Rock Cruise coming up in March.
That's going to be great, right?
We're doing shows at BB King's, I think, the 2 days before it or after it. I can't remember. I'm always bad with
that. In New York?
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
And then also a show in Chicago right around that same time, too. And then we're using that as our kickoff point. We're going to tour the rest of the summer. On the side, I've been writing some Mr. Big stuff.
Wow.
Eric is writing.
Is that going to come back?
Yeah, we're going to do some stuff at the end. When I'm done with the whole Winery Dog cycle, which will be in the fall, we'll probably go out and do a short Mr. Big album and tour thing.
Yeah.
I also have a band called Niacin with Dennis Chambers on drums.
I saw that. Niacin.
Yeah.
It reminded me when I was, dude, funny Niacin story. When I was like 25, I remember I was up a couple of days on coke, and I was at some girl's house, and I was really hungover. And I opened up her medicine cabinet, and I was just like, oh, here's some vitamins. I better take some vitamins. So I take some vitamin C and D, and there's something niacin, and I grab it. I take a couple. I'm laying in bed, and my skin lights on
turns
fire.
Turns red.
I'm like, my face, my hand, and I don't know anything about niacin.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, I've been poisoned. I'm thinking someone put something in there to kill her.
Oh,
you know,
my
your
God.
Cocaine, mine, right? So I'm like, I need help. I call my buddy. I go, dude, my skin's on fire. Something happened. He picks me up. He's like, dude, you had niacin. We
Brilliant.
Start laughing.
Great.
So when I saw you had this band niacin, I was
like. Well, niacin is vitamin B3.
Wow.
And a B3 is a Hammond B3 organ.
I love the B3.
And that was the joke, you know.
Yeah.
So the Hammond organ is the B3, and it was all bass drums and B3.
Oh, man.
So we're going to do baked potato shows in the beginning of March.
Oh, I got to go to that.
Yeah, it's a great...
Who's on B3?
A guy named John DeVallo. He's just an old 70s Hammond B3 expert.
Yeah, I love Greg Raleigh's B3 playing, right?
Yeah.
How great was
People
he?
People forget. Santana was a B3 band.
Fuck
Zeppelin,
yeah.
too.
Zeppelin?
B3 in there.
Yeah, and then, you know, Booker T, one of the best
Brilliant.
B3s ever.
Zeppelin used a lot of B3.
Zeppelin, man. B3, I had B3 in my band, and of course... you get a lot of B3 in Springsteen, the early E
yep.
Street, you know.
There was a time when it was more important to have a B3 than a guitar.
I really think B3 is one of the dopest instruments
Incredible.
Ever to make. The way it lays down a like this bed and you can sing on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's got gospel, it's got blues, it's got soul. But fuck that thing, how much it weighs,
oh
right?
Oh, my God.
But...
Yeah, that's why I played in three-piece bands, because the fourth guy probably would have been a keyboard player, would have been carrying Leslie's and B3s and moving furniture every night.
Hey, how about your ears? How's your ears and hands and shit? Your ears all right?
My ears are down a bit, but I'm okay.
Yeah,
I know guys...
Hands? Oh, remember you had that hand shit a while.
Yeah, I had a wrist thingy, but I went low carb.
Low carb?
Cured.
Are you kidding?
Gone. Gone. And I had it for years.
So are you on an Atkins diet?
It's kind of like that. I'm not like on any strict diet, but I stay away from sugar and
yeah.
breads and, you know, rice, pasta and stuff like that. I eat mostly meat and vegetables, and it makes a huge difference, man.
Is that right? Because it's protein for calcium and all that. Like
And good fat. Fat isn't bad. Bacon, avocado, cheese, all that stuff. Fat is,
yeah.
you need fat, you know?
What about your heart, though, if you're eating all that shit?
I believe it's the reverse. It's carbs that do it to your heart.
Right.
It's that high glucose that causes your joints to go out. And it's also that carbohydrate, blood sugar, diabetes that
wow.
makes your heart go. So
wow.
I have a...
That's heavy.
My Italian wife, we have guacamole and, you know, tons of olive oil and everything.
Yeah.
And gorgonzola and...
I love gorgonzola,
whoa,
huh?
Great.
Whoa, fuck.
So the Italian food is just... We pound it at the house there. We cook like maniacs.
Oh.
It's great.
I read you're a Scientologist.
For 41 years.
That's fucking dope, man.
How's that?
It's funny because my mom, I'm 48. My mom said in the 70s, some guy came by with a pamphlet
yeah.
and she got into it for about 6 months and checked it out. I didn't even know this till a
yeah.
year ago when my mom told me. She came to visit me and went, oh, there's the Scientology. I went to a place over here.
Yeah, Celebrity Center's right down the street.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's funny because I know a lot of Scientologists. I'm not going to say their names.
Yeah.
But that's pretty amazing too, right?
Yeah, it's been an important thing to me. It's been a huge help to me. And if someone's interested in it, I'll be happy to explain it to them. But I'm not a big proselytizer because the way I came to Scientology is I found out about it by myself.
Right.
So I would hope others would do that as well, you know, and maybe your thing, it may not be your thing, but it's been a huge help to me.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I never knock anybody's religion. If they
yeah.
believe in something, they believe in it. You
exactly.
know, and if they knock a religion, I go, well, that's just a newer religion. If I started a religion right now, it's going to seem completely...
You'd go through hell.
Wacky. You know what I mean? Because it's right now.
The early Christians did.
Yeah,
know?
That's what I'm saying. And, but you read that some of that stuff in the Bible, and if you came out with that right now, they'd go, this fucker's crazy.
These guys are nuts, yeah.
So whatever
yeah, it's a
you
funny
believe,
thing.
Whatever you believe in, man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's been it doesn't come up much.
Yeah.
You know? And
I never knew it.
Yeah, I don't really talk about it much, but... like I said, it's been a big help, and I'm never one to I'm not much of a proselytizer in public because I believe people should make up their own minds. You know, it's important. That's what
it.
I did.
Yeah, that's it.
Right
well,
on.
Thanks for coming by, man.
Thank you for having me, Dean.
What a great interview.
I should have Ubered over and had a glass of wine. It probably would have been another hour doing this.
That would have been cool. Oh, I talk for hours. I don't
care.
Great. I just don't like to keep the guy too long. They go, what the fuck? How long was that?
Oh, this is cool.
I had Josh Fries yesterday, two
Brilliant.
Hours, you know?
Great.
We were taking piss breaks. All right.
Yeah,
so,
you're right. I think that's how interviews should be. You know, a lot of times people come up with a list of questions and stuff like that. And
I'm not into that.
If I want to hear somebody, I'd rather hear, you know, I'd rather have a conversation with them.
That's what it is.
And if I can't have it with them, listen to someone else having a conversation.
Look, I'm a big Billy Sheehan fan. I'm a big Eat 'Em and Smile fan.
Right on.
And you're a guy that's played rock and roll all your life.
Right on.
You won. You know what I'm saying? You fucking won. No. I mean, rock and roll is why you're here and why I'm here.
Exactly.
And probably a lot of listeners, you know. I just...
Everything I have...
It's given to us, right?
I was from somebody buying a ticket, a t-shirt, or a CD.
That's right.
Everything I have.
Also...
I never forget that.
And also, everything you love is from you buying a ticket, t-shirt, and record.
Because that's the most important thing to me. My time alone, yeah. I am down in my studio with my iTunes. I got well over a terabyte now.
Wow.
I go down to my little studio, smaller than this room.
Yeah.
With some friends come over, or even if I'm by myself.
Yep.
My wife had to stay down at the NAMM show. I'd come home. I drove. So Thursday night, I'm by myself. Open up a bottle of red.
Yeah.
Put the iTunes on and just... I got so much great stuff. It's a riot going through. I found like Spooky Tooth Live.
You got vinyl?
No, it's all digital.
I'm just changing back to vinyl here.
Wow.
Now here's my rule.
Okay.
Shitloads of digital. Yeah. Fuck yeah, whatever. But the 100 records that meant something to me.
Good. I saved the vinyl versions of those. You're right.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And you know what that does to me? It takes the ADD out of listening.
Yeah,
I like you get wine, I get a coffee, I walk over there and I set side one on and I put it on. Like today I had that Skinnerd One More From the Road, Double Live, put it on, Working for MCA comes on, I just go, this is the shit.
Brilliant.
Right here. It's all I need.
And I remember a lot of times you're too lazy to get up and flip the record over, so you listen to one side over and over and over and over.
Yeah,
and...
well, that's if you had the old player where it would go back and start over again. Mine just sits there and I got to get up, man. I mean, maybe it does go back and I haven't figured it out
there's
yet.
There's a button on there somewhere. Yeah, I'd love that because there's a couple of records. Frank Zappa, just another band from LA, the Billy the Mountainside.
Oh, yeah.
We had that on in my apartment every day. Then the Tubes' first record.
Oh, yeah.
Side one every day. King Crimson Red every day. These records become iconic. And my old apartment back in Buffalo with my roommates, we'd be listening to them constantly. So they became just a part of our lives. You know?
Wow.
But I'm so into listening to so much music. If you ever get a chance to come over.
Oh, I will come over. You're saying that to the wrong guy.
Oh,
I'll
right
come
now.
Over.
Bring a drive.
Yeah.
Because I know I've probably got tons of stuff that never find. And I got live stuff and bootlegs.
Yeah.
And,
when I was in Japan.
Oh, it's a place to go.
I've got over 100 Zepp shows sitting over there. I went into that Zepp store and just was like, they had one store. It was all Zeppelin.
Incredible.
And I was like, look, I got DVDs over there that of shit. You just go, what the fuck?
I know.
I mean, that's stuff in Japan.
Well, the cool thing about it is that they would bootleg our stuff.
Yeah.
We played.
And then you trade. They just go, here's for you.
We played the Budokan.
Yeah.
Got done. I had a day off the next day. Walked down to the store. They had our show from last night with artwork shrink-wrapped,
crazy,
ready to go.
Right?
So they'd see us and they'd kind of, you know, maybe a little sheepish about it.
But they give you stuff for exchange.
Yeah, they said, take whatever you want. And we would take a giant box.
I took a duffel bag.
Oh, unbelievable.
Right? The guy, I said, you want to come see the Stones? He goes, oh. I go, you could bring your wife. And he goes, take anything you want.
Brilliant.
And I grabbed like 10 and he goes, oh, no more. And I loaded up a bag and shipped it home.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, we got, my bootleg collection from there was massive, but I also hunted down bootlegs. There's a couple places in Europe you could get them too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I eventually
you can get them right on in LA now.
Yeah.
You ever go to that place in Pasadena?
Yeah, at the
record thing or whatever?
Yeah, I've heard about it. I was there one time.
That's great, man. That's great.
And online.
Online, the sky's the limit.
It's incredible. I found some, and I you know, if I can find it on Amazon, like a lot of times, if something I know it's something that looks like it was released,
yeah,
I'll type it in Amazon. If I got it there, I'll buy it there.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to sell anybody.
I go to Amoeba every week now, and I buy vinyl, and I get these brand new. There it is, Pearl Jam Versus, brand new.
Great.
Just put it on 180 milligram. Just oh god.
Well, I traded. That's what it is. I ripped all my stuff.
Yep.
And traded it in.
Yeah.
for store credit.
Yep.
Bought more.
Yep.
Ripped that. Bought more. Ripped that. Traded that in, and it kept on going this endless cycle. So I still got about $1,500 credit there.
Wow. Well, I'll go down and say I'm Billy Sheehan and get some vinyl, boy. Records are $30, but they're worth it.
If you look in the CDs of Amoeba Music,
uh-huh.
and you see a little colored round dot, the yellow or red or blue.
Yeah, those are yours.
Those are CDs from my collection because I had them all color coded.
Oh, my God.
So as I'm flipping through the things, I still see some of my CDs in there.
That's hilarious.
That's funny.
Where can we find you? You got a Twitter? You tweet much?
I do.
That's cool.
Actually, I tweet, and then the tweet goes on to Facebook.
Yeah.
My Facebook.
It's all linked.
Personal, yeah, it's all linked together. But I usually use Twitter as my main thing.
It's Billy on Bass.
Yeah, Billy on Bass.
At Billy on Bass.
At
Twitter.
There we go. Yeah. And then I'm my BillySheehan.com website. Anybody can go there, click email me. It comes right to me.
Right.
I read it personally.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always easy to find. I always have been.
Tell Steve Vai I want him on the show.
I will.
Yeah. Oh, man, Steve
I will.
Vai.
I just saw him Monday night. And we talked stories about the old days.
Yeah.
What a ride.
You go to the Rainbow still?
I haven't in a long time. I'm married now, so
let's go up there and have some pizza, though, and just trip around one night.
Tony and Michael at the door there, they're always so great. Billy, I got a good Tuscany for you here. Come on.
That's great.
And we have a riot. So, let's keep in touch.
We're
going to do a Rainbow night. I Uber there and Uber back.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I know
I'll meet you there.
And we'll get a table, and the stories will flow.
Thanks for coming down to and doing the live podcast.
My pleasure.
I know
that
you're
was
Jim
so
Florentine's
much fun.
Friend. Thank you so much. And thanks for coming over here, man.
My pleasure, Dean.
There he is, Billy Sheehan, guys. Hit him up on Twitter. What a great guy, right? Check out Winery Dogs. They got the record out now. Also, of course, Mr. Big. And, one last question before you go.
Yes, sir.
I read that you were the guy that suggested Eat 'Em and Smile in Spanish.
Yeah, I was.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It didn't do as well as we thought, but I went in with Dave to sing it, and I don't speak Spanish at all, so they had to coach me through phonetically, but we did all of Vuelto Loco and Tímido, all the Shy Boy and all that, so we did the whole thing.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It was hilarious. So down in South America, I signed a bunch of them.
Wow. Yeah, no, it was genius idea that you read that Mexico had like a shitload of people that were between 18 and 29
exactly right.
Or something. You're like, well, we should make this record for them.
And Dave speaks pretty good Spanish, so he pulled it off. That was great.
What doesn't Dave do? The guy's a ninja. He's a paramedic. He's a rock
climber.
And roller. A rock climber. That's the thing. I was born in Yosemite, so Skyscraper, that video, you know, he's on El Capitan.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Pretty awesome. So, well, again, thanks for having me.
Yeah,
and,
there you go.
Whoever's listening in, you ever want to drop me a line for any reason, I'm always happy to hear from everyone and answer back when I can.
Yeah, what about Mark Ellis? He got to ask you a question. A huge, huge Billy Sheehan, David Lee Roth fan, Ham fan at that show. That was great.
Yeah, he was a great guy. A whole great
gang.
Yeah,
he said you emailed him back.
Yeah,
that's so great, dude.
It was a nice bunch, though. It was a great night. And
we'll do it again.
Oh, we will. Yes, sir. Fantastic.
There he is, Billy Sheehan, guys. Woo-hoo. Thanks for tuning in.
See ya.